Everybody, if it's 1 o'clock on Tuesday, must be Tuesdays with Dave. Welcome to the call. Hope everybody's doing fine, recovering from Easter break, and back in the swing of things. All right, we got a lot going on today. Let's see. First of all, if you're new to Mastery, welcome aboard. Simply follow along what your coach says, and follow along the inside of the training program, and you'll do well. All right, let's see. So a couple of reminders here. First one is, if you haven't confirmed for Ultimate Partnering 9, please do so by contacting Jermaine, Jeannie, or Jeff. And you can either call them or contact them through their emails, which you've gotten many of. And also, there is a Mastery Testimonial video contest this year. So, we want to know what your experience is. What we're asking you to do is put together a video of a very creative video of what you've done within the Mastery program. So the winner is going to get a full day consulting with me. I'm going to take you to Harvard Club for lunch, and we're going to I'm going to tear apart your business, take it apart, and put it back together again for you. There will be some homework prior to you coming to see me for the day. But we're going to get a lot of work done, and we'll get you focused. So that is, let me see, I'm just reading, make sure I got everything in that I was supposed to there. Yeah, it can be emotional, it can be funny, it can be anything in between. If you have any questions, call Jermaine. He'll tell you all about it. All right, so that's that. If you're new to the call, press 0 to get into the queue. Operator's going to come on. She's going to take your questions. I mean, she's not going to take your questions. She's going to introduce you to the call, ask me your questions. I'm going to spend the next hour or so answering any and all questions that I can. Real estate related mostly, life related, sure. I've got a lot of life experience. We want to say a gut well to Gary Hess. If you're at Business Building or Commercial Training Academy or went to the Wilson Conference, all three of those events were back-to-back-to-back. Gary was a participant at those events, and if you remember, when I was teaching business building, he and I were going to sit down and talk about some framing of some of the stuff that we were doing here in the office for some systems. And unfortunately, he had a massive heart attack. He's still alive, good, which is good, but he has got a stroke on one side of his body. we want him to know that we're thinking about him. And anybody wants to contact Gary or his family, you can give the office a call, and we'll give you contact information for him. So get well soon, Gary. That was a life is full of curveballs. All right, let's do a high five. High five goes to Frank, Jeremy, and Judy Kurtz from Thurmont, Maryland. Recently closed their first 79-unit property in Atlanta, Georgia. Purchase price was $3 million. In $2,000. That's an interesting amount. Raised their money through private money investors. The value play that it was a moderate repositioning. They made some interior improvements, so we're going to on each unit. They're going to be able to increase the rents once those improvements are done. And the rents are currently below market. The monthly cash flow, net cash flow, once they're done, is $5,600 per month. Congratulations. To you. High five. All right. Got a couple of questions. So as you press *0, getting yourself into the queue, I'm looking for up-and-coming events, and I think the next event is UP9, mid-July, and that's coming up pretty fast. Winter is hopefully done here in Boston. Warm weather is just starting to come. But UP9's next, and then we have asset management in September, and we do sponsorship in November, and we do private money in another commercial training academy in the fall as well. So if you haven't made plans to get into UP9, get to UP9. George Foreman. Emmett Smith is going to be there as well. We've been trying to get George Foreman. He'll be at one of our events. All right. Greg Brown. He wrote in and said, I have a 69 unit that he's looking at that needs repairs. He says, a contractor told him that a rehab will maximize his rental potential. He was wondering if there's some sort of ROT cost for rehabbing each unit. Must be a rule of thumb. I need to know so I can raise money for the property. Well, no, there's no rule of thumb. There's rule of thumb cost for individual items inside of a unit that need to be rehabbed. But you really need to go through and go unit by unit. I made the mistake of doing a big rehab and not doing every single unit and then adding it all up. You know, and then when you do every single unit and then add it all up, the good thing is you've got your work orders for your rehab all set. You know what needs to be done in each particular unit and how much can it cost you. So, no, there's no rule of thumb for rehabbing. You got to get in there down and dirty. It takes a little bit of time. It's called the takeoff. You got to do your takeoff and get some contractors in there for the different things that you don't quite know how to quote. Get them quoted, and then and that's it. All right, let's see. Michael Nijin. He writes in. He says, what are the – and these are, by the way, these are emails from students that couldn't be on the call. What are some of the things that we need to consider as investors when deciding how many units to buy for a multifamily? For example, if 100 units is needed for a property management company, does that mean it will be more difficult to manage if we buy a 25 to 50 unit apartment? Is there significantly more time involved in trying to run the apartment as an investor for a small number of units? Well, first of all, you first start out buying the number of units that you're comfortable buying, because if you go too big too fast, subconsciously you'll sabotage yourself. Typically, a management company will start at about 75. Actually, an on-site property manager can be supported at 75 units, just barely though. And then below that, you can get, you know, third-party off-site property managers that will handle it. So, no, you know, it doesn't take any more time. It's the quality of management is sometimes less, and sometimes there are some areas that just don't have good management for smaller properties. For instance, Brockton, Massachusetts, right? I did my thing at the very beginning. You know, there's just no really good management company for Brockton. Cincinnati's a difficult market for small units, larger units, all right? So it's not any more work. It's just a matter of finding quality talent. You're going to be getting the same information, your Monday morning reports, your monthly report, that's a weekly report, and then your other monthly reports. Mike asked another question, and that is, what's the best way to research secondary and tertiary markets around a major city when some of the data available is published online at the major city level, talking with brokers? So most of the information is published through what's called the MSA, the Metropolitan Statistical Area, which encompasses quite a distance. I think it's 2.5 miles square. But so the way you get, if they're secondary tertiary markets, then they should have some sort of a chamber of commerce, and that chamber of commerce will have statistics, and that's how you go looking at that data. You can also get the data from the brokers as well, from the area. But your best source is that chamber of commerce or the Bureau of Labor, Economic Development Committee for a particular area. All right, so we do have some more questions that were emailed in, but I'm going to be taking open lines now, and there's a break in the action, which sometimes there is. I'm going to go back to the questions. So, operator, who's first? Who's first in today's call?
Dave, we have no questions at the moment.
Okay, so you want to press *0. Everybody must be hungover from eating all that candy for Easter. So, all right, *0 is your opportunity to get in, and let's see. Chris Taft writes in. He says, how do you feel about interest-only loans? I have a 244-unit that the broker is asking, $21 million. When I do the numbers on the deal, my strike price is a little under $15 million. But when I spoke to the mortgage company, he encouraged me to apply for an interest-only loan. When do I feel as interest-only the numbers work closer to $19 million? I know some investors don't like interest-only, but what is your feeling? You know, I've done interest-only loans. Here's the deal with interest-only. You know, you do an interest-only for the first couple of years if you think you get a really good value add that's going to kick in, you know, after the first couple of years. And then when the principal kicks in, that's going to be a higher payment each month, but it'll be offset by the increase in the value add. So that's when I look at interest-only. It's got to have a good value. If I have to do an interest-only loan to make the deal work, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. again, unless there's some sort of good value right on the backside. I'm going to take another one. This is from Anita Vincent. Anita writes in, how do you calculate your exit strategy when you have owned the property for 3 to 5 years? I was recently asked by an investor who may be interested in investing in ideas. Okay. So the question is, how do you calculate your exit strategy after you've owned the property for 3 to 5 years when you're projecting out? Well, it depends on the market. But in this market, let's say you bought at an 8 cap rate, normally in a normal market, you would project out that whatever you bought in at, you were going to sell out at, typically. Now, is that perfect? No. Does it work every time? No. But the thing is you have no idea what the cap rates are going to be in 3 to 5 years. So most of the time, you're usually safe. In a market that is just starting to recover, cap rates usually get compressed and they can go lower. And if that's the case, you stay the same. But in a market like this, when we know that interest rates are going up in the next year, they already started a little bit, next couple of years, what you want to do is if you're going in at an 8 cap, your exit cap should be at least an 8.5, maybe even a 9. So that's how you determine. And you divide that by your net operating income, and that's projected through your cash flow, your regular cash flow statement. All right, so who do we have on the line now?
Okay, up next, first question actually comes from Christy. Christy, please go ahead. First question comes from Christy. Christy, please go ahead.
Hey, Christy.
Hi, good morning. This is Christy Nguyen from San Francisco. Good.
Good.
First time on the call. I met your brother
Jack
a couple weeks ago. Yeah, thanks. I have a question. When we go out to a different market, how do you build relationship with the local, like lenders, with the local community banks and lenders?
How do you find them?
How do you build a relationship? Like, go in and how do you start to talk to them and build a relationship?
Yeah, so there's scripts. In your bootcamp manual, there's scripts for a management company, there's scripts for a broker, there's scripts for economic development committee. And the thing to do is I would start with the broker and the management company. Your broker is I would go with the management company first, go through that script, all right, and then try to find, if you think they're the type of management company that you're going to do business with, then you try to find what you have in common with them, and then the future conversations always start with whatever you have in common, because people like people that are like them. So that's how you build your relationship. And then when you'll notice at the end of that script, it says, which real estate brokers are the movers and shakers or something to that effect. And you're basically asking them for a referral in the marketplace as to who might be a good broker that you can do business with. Get the referrals from them, and you ask that to every management company, even if you don't think you're going to do business with them. And then you'll see that the same names will start popping up. And you also ask, who's the best real estate attorney in the area? So you get that referral as well. Who's the best appraiser in the area? Get that referral. Just go down the list for your team members, and you keep asking those questions to each new potential team member, and then you'll start noticing that certain names are popping up often, and those are the people you're going to target.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a matter of getting in front of them, taking them out to lunch, having conversations with them over the telephone. That's how you do it.
Okay. Now, what about the community, like the banks, the community banks?
Same thing. Let me see. There's actually.
But do we walk to the bank?
I'm sorry?
Do we walk to the bank and then introduce ourselves, or do we just call them up?
You got to do some research. Excuse me. You got to do some research first and find out who the person is that handles. Excuse me. Find out who's the person that handles the real estate owned, the one who makes the decisions, the one who runs the department, and then from there, that's the person that you want to target. Then you can send them a letter. It's either in the home study system or the manual. Certainly on your seat on the form CDs, there's actually banker letters in there. There's a banker letter that basically introduces yourself and lets them know that you're going to be calling them. It's either to invite them out to lunch or just to continue the conversation. But the time that you call them, you invite them out to lunch. And the same thing as working with a broker.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You're welcome. Hey, are you drinking coffee this morning?
Why?
I think you need a double.
Yeah. No, I've been now sick. Yeah, I've been now sick catching a bad cold.
Catching a cold? It's
been COVID.
Yeah.
Everybody
in my family has a cold, too. It's a nasty upper chest cold.
Yeah.
All right, well, you go have some chicken soup and get well.
Thanks.
All right, see you later. Okay, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Rob. Rob, please go ahead.
We're trying to pursue, building a relationship with a family office. Do you have any experience working with family offices?
Yeah. Were you at the Wilson Conference?
We were at the Wilson Conference in Miami and just after Thanksgiving.
Oh, they just had a recent one as well where we sent a team down, a whole bunch of mastery students went down there. I was actually supposed to go and speak, except at the last minute I couldn't. I had Bob Bowman went down in my stead. Here's the whole idea with family offices. You've got to, they want a relationship. You're not going to get money, by meeting them at the conference. You need to go to their office, you need to sit down with them. This is just with the advisors, eventually you get to meet the family. But so it takes like 2-3 different meetings and a lot of different correspondence, and then they get comfortable with you, and then they do business with you, typically. That's how it works. And they don't want smaller deals, I don't know who you're talking to, but typically they want to write a check for $4 to $5 million minimum, which is like a $16 to $20 million deal. So those are the size.
That's what we found. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what we found. And we've also found that they're very fee sensitive, I know that you talk a lot about, acquisition fee, 3 to 5%.
Yeah.
These guys want more like 1 to 2%. Now, if it's a bigger deal, the number is bigger, but, and that's fine if we can build a relationship where they can fund all of our deals, in a 12 to 24 month period, that'd be fantastic. Do more volume that way. But, I've noticed that their criteria are a little different.
Excuse me. I'll tell you, wait a minute. I'm just getting over a chest cold. I'll tell you why they're fee sensitive, because they've invested in a lot of people that are doing raises, all right? So these people raise $100 million, $200 million, and then they fill it with real estate, and they're making their money off of the fees, not in the appreciation of the real estate. So when they come back to you and say, we only want to give X amount in fees, you can say, well, I can understand why you're saying that. Usually with my experience with family offices, and just by saying that line right there tells them that you have experience with other family offices. They say, usually my experience with, other family offices is the fact that they typically do real estate deals with people that are doing funds, and they get fees to death with the funds, and those people are making their money off the fees. And you say, we make a small amount of money off the fees, but we're also equity partners in this deal. We make our money off of the equity in this deal. We're bringing good deals, good conservative deals to the table, and that's how you make your money as well. That's how you try to overcome that objection and get higher acquisition fees. But it's only an acquisition fee too. You're not getting, well, there's the repositioning, there's the disposition fee when you go to sell it. That should be about 1%. There's a refinance fee.
Right.
If you go refinance, that should be about 1%. But other than that, unless you have an asset management fee in there of 1% as well, and basically, you can negotiate with the management company, and if they get a 5% fee, get it down to 4% and you take the other 1%. Other than that, they're not getting fee to death by our basic fee structure. So,
right.
I would use those as talking points.
That brings up one last question.
I'll make it very quick. Hold on a second.
Okay.
I've been to many family office events, and that is a common theme throughout those events sometimes. It's either said from stage or it's said behind the stage, but it's the fact that, especially the real estate guys, they're getting so much money in fees, that they're just tired of being fee to death. Also with their stock equities and all that other stuff too, some of the other investments. So, all right, what's your other question?
The last one, and I'll make it quick. It's the method in which the pref gets paid. We've set up our deals in the past where we do a flat, 60-40, 70-30 split between managing member and preferred interest shareholders. And any cash distributions that are made are split that way. Now, if we fall short on a pref in any given year, that gets made up on the back end. These guys, institutionals and family offices, tend to want the pref first. And if it's not made up in year one, and it gets made up in year two, and until it gets made up, management makes nothing. I don't know if that's how you're setting up your deals. I mean, I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way to do it, but typically the way we've done it in the past is we'll just do a 60-40 split, and if we fall short on the prep, we make it up later.
I don't make it up because it's a true pref is preferred return, which means they get the money first, but it's not a guarantee that they're going to get the money, and that's what you're doing when you're telling them that you'll make it up later. I mean, if the deal does better as you go along, like you expect it will, they're going to be getting a higher return. They're not only going to get the prep, but they'll get the higher return as well. So, in our deals, we don't make it up.
But you pay the prep before you pay yourselves on distribution.
Yeah, absolutely.
You always
pay the prep. Yeah, that's the definition. That's why it's called a preferred return.
Right.
Because they get the first money in. Yeah,
okay, so it's the incentive for the manager to get it above the prep.
Listen, you're going to ask a question. You got to let me answer.
Okay.
So our typical deals are a 60-40 split with the – and then once we hit the 60-40, then it will switch over to 50-50 on the back end. So No, I'm sorry. It's 60-40 for the cash flow, and then it's 50-50 on the disposition with a prep, but no guarantee on the prep that it's going to come. If we fall short a month, we fall short. But there's other months where we're going to be way over. We got a deal right now that's giving a 17% cash on cash return, and we projected a 9. You know, so.
Wow.
Okay. Good. Did you want to make one more statement? I didn't mean to cut you off, but boy, you.
No. I'm sorry.
That
was perfect. Thank you, Dave. Sorry,
okay.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Good luck. Okay, who's next out there?
Okay, up next we have Mark. Mark, please go ahead.
Mark.
Hey, Dave, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. This is my first time, new student, first time on the call, searching for... And excited to be here, by the way. Very excited to be here. So,
all right. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm in sunny Southeast Florida, looking at emerging markets in terms of just following the recipe to start up, right? Backyard plus an emerging market. And as I look at them, I want to express a concern, and I'd like you just to validate it or tell me that I'm overthinking it or something. But if we're looking at a market correction coming up within the next whatever the period of time is, right? So a year, 2 years, 3 years. And when the market correction takes place, very often a lot of tourism can be affected. And if I'm looking at areas in not just my backyard, but that are within a day's drive here, and I start to look at markets like Port St. Lucie and Cape Coral and that whole Fort Myers area, a lot of their job growth that are making them a good emerging market was based on tourism. It was a resurgence or tourism coming back into the marketplace. And so my concern is that if the market does go soft, that those types of jobs would be the first ones to be at risk. And what would look like an emerging market today would be at risk. Am I overthinking it, or what are your thoughts?
Well, sure. I mean, when there's a correction in the marketplace, there's going to be people are going to stay home. It all depends on, the focus on the correction, who gets hurt the worst. But I think tourism jobs and other types of jobs, it all depends on this is the way you look at a correction. It's the service jobs that get affected the most. A lot of those tourist jobs are service jobs. But they're the ones that are going to be laid off and affected first. So those are the properties that you're selling off now and you're avoiding now as well prior to the correction. But if you're finding good B properties and good B neighborhoods, regardless of the area, as long as it's typically a strong market that follows typical real estate cycles, then you're going to do well regardless. And those are the types of deals that we're advocating that you get right now going into this, when the correction is going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Okay. So staying out of the seas, staying out of the – properties typically occupied by service level and staying into the B's will help you weather that correction in that market.
Definitely. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Welcome aboard again.
Thank you.
All right, who's next on the wise cracker line? Hey, by
okay,
the way,
we have no further.
Oh, no further questions. All right, so press star zero, and you will get on into the queue. I'm going to answer a couple of the questions and also reminisce a little bit, because you know every once in a while I say, well, actually I do it every call if you notice, at least once I say, okay, who's next on the wisecracker line? Well, that line actually came from a Jay Giles tune called Muscle Get Lost, and Peter Wolf was the lead vocals of that particular band who broke up back in 1982 after their My Angel is a Centerfold album came out. They were one of the best bands to see, if not the best live band to see. I must have seen them about 9 or 10 times, maybe into the teens. I don't know. We used to go to this place called Cape Cod Coliseum that was just an old warehouse. Probably, you know, surprising, you know, didn't have a fire and people got killed. It was an old warehouse, no air conditioning. We go down there at 7 o'clock in the morning on a summer day, and the show didn't start until about 7:30 at night. Half the kids that went didn't make it in because they're too inebriated. And Jay Giles used to play, and they play all night long. And I remember seeing him at Boston Garden on New Year's Eve, like 3 years in a row, thinking to myself, I'm never going anyplace else other than Boston Garden on New Year's Eve to see Jay Giles. And then they broke up the year later. Jay Giles just died about 4 days ago. He was the guitarist in the band, and his real name was Jay Giles. So Peter Wolf just came out with a new album, probably, I don't know, 17th album. He's a Boston native here. You can see him in the local clubs around here as well. But, you know, after they broke up, I guess it was such a bitter breakup that they broke out. It was 17 years before they got back together and did a tour. They played Fenway Park with Aerosmith. They backed up Aerosmith. And I saw him at this place called Great Woods that was in Mansfield, Massachusetts. And I remember looking out at the crowd, you know, it's the same energy. It was the same great show. I mean, they got a lot of good tunes. But I remember looking at everybody in the crowd, and 17 years later, you know, all the men were balding and about 40 pounds overweight, and all the women were still beautiful. But, you know, I think to myself, oh, my God, we are all aging. So it was quite a contrast. But anyway, that's my Jay Giles. Jay Giles, Blow Your Face Out, one of the best rock albums, rock live albums ever. All right, so who's next on the call?
There are no further questions at the moment, Dave.
Okay, press star zero to get in on the call, and we are going to answer a couple more questions. The next one comes from Jason Quayle. He says, I was recently sent by a broker 5 multi-unit properties between the ranges of 5 to 69 units. None of the properties worked according to the numbers, and I let the broker know that they didn't, and I let him know why. Ever since then, I have not been able to get the broker on the phone. Well, maybe it was in your delivery. He doesn't return my emails. Is there something I can do to get the broker back on my side? I don't think I offended him. Well, Jason, here's the deal. You probably let the broker know that you're an investor and you need to buy based on certain criteria, and that broker doesn't list based on those criteria, and he'll probably never do business with you because you're not going to buy overinflated pricing, especially in this market. So... That's why, you know, he realized that you weren't a match for him, and he's not a match for you either, so just move on to the next one. Simple as that. Another broken heart. All right, let's see. Jim Myers writes in. Jim's from Brooklyn. Yeah. I'm in the process of closing on a 44-unit property in St. Louis. The management company didn't do a really good job managing the property or maintaining the occupancy. My question is, when I do close, can I fire the property manager? Do I have to keep them because I have a contract with the property? Or do I train them to do better? You get rid of them. You do not have to keep them. You should actually be, you know, vetting out your new property manager now. You should be talking to different companies in the area and, you know, getting referrals and finding out who the good ones are and be ready on day one for takeover. That new management company should be ready for day one takeover. If you've got a property where they're not doing a good job managing and the occupancy is not up there and you think you can retrain them, you cannot. How do I know this? Because I have tried. You cannot teach an old dog new tricks, especially, you know, they may have started out great, but then they get in these bad habits. And because nobody's overseeing them, the bad habits continue and they slide even more. To break bad habits from an established management company on a property that haven't been disciplined in the past, it is a fight that you do not want to fight. You just want to get a new company in there, let them be horrified at how bad the previous manager was, and then turn that property around. Okay, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Wesley. Wesley, please go ahead.
Yes, my name is Wesley Harris in Los Angeles.
Hey, Wesley, what's going on over there in L.A.?
I don't know. I don't look around in L.A. I find it too ridiculous. The weather's cloudy, if that's what you're asking about.
I'm just wondering what's going on at Randy's Donut. What's going on over there at Randy's Donut?
That's down in Culver City, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm out in the San Fernando Valley. I never make it down there.
Oh, you don't?
So I understand that Culver City and Inglewood and those areas are coming back, but I've been so scared of California market, I'm looking in Texas.
Yeah,
where,
I think that a lot of the yield has been taken out of the California markets unless you go inland. There's still some opportunity there. That being your own backyard, you know, Inglewood and Culver, those areas are coming back. You have to be, you know, very careful on what you do, where you invest there. You got to know the neighborhoods. But, yeah, the Dallas markets, they still continue to create jobs and job growth. You know, I got a call from Graciela, who is a student, mastery student that started with us probably about 8 years ago now. She was a school teacher. Her husband was laid off. She was from Mexico. Her mom was from Mexico. She was born in the U.S. And she was teaching third graders how to speak Spanish. And she didn't know what she was going to do. Her husband got laid off. Her financial advisor told her she was going to go be on welfare if she didn't change something. And she started investing. She joined this program 8 years later, she's bought and sold over, I think it's 14 complexes, and she continues to buy in Texas. She's been in different markets. She started in where the Bushes grew up. I forget what the name of that city is, but where the Bushes were, Midland, Odessa. Did very well there,
yeah.
And has moved down to San Antonio now, and now she's looking up in Dallas. And she was asking me where should she go, you know, to avoid any downturn. And I was like, it's not so much going, it's just being very careful on what you buy. That's all, because, you know, you get experience now, get good properties that are going to, you know, see their way through the downturn. But that experience that you get going in is going to pave the way to lots of properties, you know, and the experience that you get buying those properties prior to is just going to set everybody up that's listening on this call, everybody in mastery, set up for the next correction, and that can set you up for life.
Well, thank you for that information. That's helpful because I'm in Texas and I'm originally from Dallas, but I read a comment that the secondary markets might be interesting, and so I've been looking at Waco and Tyler and Wichita Falls, and I made my first ever LOI went out yesterday.
All right, congratulations!
It's amazing how freeing that has been to me. I've been so afraid to put out an LOI, and now that I've done it, I'm going, I want to do another.
Yeah.
I want to do another. Let's get a deal. Let's do something.
There you go.
But I picked a property, 90 units in a small town you've probably never heard of. That's part of the Wichita Falls metropolitan statistical area.
We almost bought that one, Wichita Falls, but it never kind of went through. Don't, if it's not under contract, don't mention it. You just never know who's listening and who might go get a deal.
Yeah. I just want to, you've gotten me nervous on this about the corrections coming and whatever, but then buy wisely and we won't have to worry. And so, I spent a weekend with your brother at the Immersion in Sacramento. he's a lot of fun.
He's a character, huh?
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of fun with him. But I also learned a lot, and a very conservative approach on what we're doing.
Yeah.
But then when I see all these things on the internet, they're all now saying to be determined by market.
Yeah.
And
because we're in the stage of the cycle now where, you know, they can go out and they can put a property up for auction, for bid, basically. And that's what they're doing. And most of the times you won't win, but you want to, you know, you want to try to get it within the top three or four. Ask for price guidance from the broker if they'll give it to you. Have, if the relation is good enough, they'll give you price guidance. And then you want to get on that seller's call. If you're in the top three or four, then they'll have the seller talk to you. And that's what you want in case the other deals don't work. But you know what? Even those things, yeah, even, you know, some of our best brokers, they're doing it too. So it's not, you know, the number of pocket listings are down, that's for sure. But it's just where the market is right now. You just play the game, learn the game, and those deals do come through every once in a while. But, you know, the experience of actually just doing them and being part of that situation is worth it.
Okay. Well, I really enjoy what I've been learning, and I've enjoyed the support that I've been receiving from your team.
Spread the word.
I appreciate it.
Especially on the internet. People write a bunch of crap on the internet that's not true. So get on the internet and get on that pissed off consumer site and tell them it's not true. They fulfill. They teach.
I'll do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Let us know when you need us.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Okay. Who's next?
Okay. Up next we have Gary. Gary, please go ahead.
Hi,
hey,
Dave. Gary from Phoenix. Gary from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah. What's going
on? Although right now we're in California selling our last properties here, and referencing your last California guy call, a 4-cap is a good deal here.
So when did you buy those properties?
They're actually, our family built them back in the 50s, so we've had them forever, but it's just time to move the money out of California.
It's definitely a good time to be selling there.
And to your other point, Randy Zonitz is alive and well and doing just like always.
Oh, yeah? You just buy Randy's?
Oh, yeah. Every time we go by the L.A. airport, you got to have a donut.
Yeah. Oh, just one? Come on. I do
yeah.
a tasting. Every time I'm there, I do a tasting. You know, I get like a half a dozen, and I take a couple bites of each.
Yeah. So my question is, I wanted to revisit your a few callers back when they were talking about markets in Cape Coral and Fort Myers and a possible downturn. When we were in Fort Myers during the last downturn, and one of the issues there, and I don't know if it's across the country, it was just there, but at that time, 41% of the jobs were all construction because they were building new homes everywhere and they overbuilt. So when the downturn happened, of course, 41% of the people left. But
wow.
If we're buying in different markets that are not tourist areas or construction areas, do you still head for a B unit? I always thought you'd head for a C because those are more stable with service workers. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing is during a downturn, it's the service workers that lose their jobs first. So that's why they're unstable through a downturn. This is what my first and best mentor taught me a long, long time ago. And in a market like this, where everything is, where there's a lot of yield taken out of the market and cap rates are compressed, any marginal property should be sold. And the only ones you keep in your portfolio are the good properties in good neighborhoods.
Okay. We missed you in Miami, by the way. What a great meeting with the office, family offices last week.
Yeah.
And I know your call before that talked about they like new construction, you know, A buildings. So is it, you know, which typically have more compressed cap rates. Is that something we should be looking at this point in the market, do you think?
I'm sorry, the fact that they like new construction, what was the question after that?
Is that something we should be looking at, even though they're a much lower cap rate at this point?
If you've got a relationship with a builder that you could invest in new construction with a family office, they would look at it that way. But there's no sense. Let's put it this way: family offices know about the deals that any deal that has hit the market, has hit the streets, as they say, through a broker's office. They know about that deal. They're looking for relationships that they can get off-market deals. So
okay.
I wouldn't focus on those. There's much more
okay,
deals
so,
than he's already built.
So it sounds like we're narrowing down to B-type units.
Yeah.
Okay. And one last thing, I've heard you mention frequently in the last year, St. Louis. And
yeah.
We were in St. Louis for 15 years, still have relatives there, and we've driven all over town, and I don't see anything happening. Do you know something particularly that's going on there? Besides, they're building a new wing on the hospital, but other than that.
I can't remember exactly what the research showed, but St. Louis pops up on several different lists as a market that is it's moving forward. I don't know what type of job growth is propelling you forward. But I remember I was there 2 years ago in St. Louis, and it was really bad. And then just a year later, all of a sudden, I started hearing things, and I called a couple of my friends over from St. Louis, and they're like, "Oh no, nothing's going on over here." I was like, "A lot of times the locals are, you know, they got local paradigms, so they don't shift out from, you know, the thinking, especially negative thinking when a market's been down for so long." So then, you know, I was reading, I think it was Milken Report, that St. Louis was in there. There was just I think it was C.B. Richard Ellis put out a report on five markets that were up and coming. St. Louis was one of them, one of the five, as well as Cincinnati. And then it popped up somewhere else as well. So I got back on the radar, and I didn't start looking at it to go over and invest there, because we're just kind of in a transition right now. Myself personally, I sold off a whole bunch of units. You know, I've got some family things that I'm working with right now. So it's almost like in a little sabbatical. But we're still buying. You know, we just bought one in Huntsville. So I still get a lot of contacts and the deals still come in. So, you know, when it's a too good to be true deal, I still jump on it. But so I didn't jump into the St. Louis market, you know, going into the research to jump in and move on it. But if you call the Chamber of Commerce, the Economic Development Committee, and ask them what's going on, they'll tell you. They'll tell you,
okay.
You know, why is that? You just ask them, you know, why is the market, what are you doing to attract jobs? What jobs are coming in? I'll let you know.
Okay. I do know it's, when we researched it before, it's the most diversified market in the country. There's more corporate headquarters there than anywhere except New York. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But also on the north half, you got the Ferguson effect, which is kind of moving south. So just
what's on the north?
Ferguson, Black Lives Matter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just
north of St. Louis?
Yeah, the Highway 40 runs east and west, kind of divides it in half, so we've pretty much decided to stay on the south half and then west, but the whole north half. I get deals sent to me all the time from there, but, boy, they're right in the middle of terrible areas. So.
Oh, yeah. You got to be careful.
So anyway,
just starting out.
Yeah, got to know the area. Okay, thanks, Dave. I appreciate your calls.
All right, good luck out there.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, got time for a couple more questions, at least two. Who's next?
Up next we have Mike. Mike, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Mike.
I'm in Austin, Texas, getting ready to go to Frank's, the hot dog lounge down there on Colorado Street in downtown Austin.
Oh, yeah. I love Frank's.
Yes, great hot dogs.
What kind do you get over there? I like onions.
I like it with sauerkraut.
Yeah, I like that too. Sauerkraut and mustard. You know what's so
looking
great about
forward.
Austin too is they have Austin has all of those street vendors, you know, the street trucks, the food trucks.
Yes.
On the street in Austin. Oh man, they're really good as well. Problem is they keep moving.
They
every time they're back
food,
they're
on
that freaking corner. What?
Right. They have great food.
They do. Yep, they do. So what's going on in your world?
Well, I have a question for you. One of my meetups, a guy from CSSI, they're a cost surrogate study group that accelerates let's see, they accelerate the depreciation from typically 27 and a half years, which is normal, down to 7 years. And they also, and then they also do repair repairs regulations to 40% per building. And I was just wondering what your take is on that, and what you thought about those kind of savings, because it can certainly increase the cash flow.
I've done cost segregation on any deal that I was going to hold over 3 years. So I like cost segregation. Of course, you know, you have to pay that back when you go to sell it. But I mean, it certainly helps with the taxes, that's for sure.
I wasn't really sure on how all that worked, and at the resale, what you have to pay back if you accelerate the depreciation.
You get taxed 25% on the costs. I believe it's 25% on what you've accelerated. But you'd have to check with a tax accountant for sure.
Okay. So do you have a firm that does that, or would you like me to forward to you their information?
Oh, I do, yeah. Yeah, we've got a couple.
Okay.
That does it.
Okay. Well, I figured that. I just thought I'd get your input on it and see if that was something that worth investigating, as far, because it increases the cash flow a lot.
Increases the cash flow, yep, and it decreases your taxable income at the end of the year. So it's just good. How does it increase your tax flow? I mean, how does it increase your cash flow?
Well, because of the depreciation, instead of over 7 years, you can depreciate it over, 27 and a half years, you can depreciate it over 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah, but is that in your pocket? Does that increase in your pocket cash flow?
Pardon me?
Does that increase your in-your-pocket cash flow? I thought what that did is it allowed you to write off more, and actually, if your property is like cash flowing like crazy, you can actually show a loss because of all the depreciation, the accelerated depreciation. I think that's the biggest benefit.
Okay.
Oh, which would mean that you wouldn't have to pay taxes as much taxes, which would mean you keep more in your pocket. So, yeah, I guess it would affect your cash flow. Keep more in your pocket. Yep.
Yeah. I'm a new student. I've been a student since January. So, you know, I only do what you say to do. I don't listen to, you know, I go to these meetups and they have all these other guys in there about that have their own ideas on how to buy apartments. And, you know, I listen to them, but I'm not going to do anything that's not in your program. That's what I'm paying for.
That's a smart thing to do. Not to say that other people don't have good ideas. I mean, I'm certainly not the only one doing apartments successfully out there. But at the same time, if the system that we have works, so you don't want to variate from the system too far. That's for sure. But no, I mean, I do. I go and I listen to apartment guys all the time. You know, not usually at the meetup. I don't usually. You know, And I say this, and I do the same thing. I sell the education, but I usually go and I'll sit at lectures at CB Richard Ellis. I'll go to their meetings. I go as many real estate meetings as I can to learn what other people are doing and how they're doing it more efficiently than I might be doing it. So there are, you know, everybody specializes in their own things, and everybody's good at their own things. So I wouldn't 100% discount people, but at the same time, follow the system that we've laid out for you, because that's proven that it works. But just always keep your eyes and ears open for, you know, something that might sound interesting, something you can test, you know, things like that.
Well, yeah, I don't have a closed mind towards it, but if it doesn't fall within the scope of what you teach and what I'm trying to master, then, you know, I don't give it a whole lot of consideration. I mean, I'll listen to it.
That makes sense.
Just trying to be successful, Dave.
You get there. Success is a journey.
It is a journey, and I'm enjoying it, actually. I'm looking forward to Ultimate $5 million coming up in a few months.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
One last question. I just did the underwriting on a 138-unit complex in San Angelo, Texas. How do you feel about that market?
San Antonio?
No, San Angelo.
I don't know it. What's it near?
It's in between San Antonio and Midland, Odessa.
Oh, wow. No, I don't know. I remember flying to Midland, Odessa one time and seeing nothing but, like, desert down there, and all of a sudden there's, you know, a city.
Yeah, it's probably about, about 130 miles west of San Antonio, northwest of San Antonio.
I really don't know that market. Yeah, I would, you know, do the normal research, call over to the Economic Development Committee, see what types of jobs are coming in, what they're doing to bring those jobs in,
yeah,
and make a decision from there.
It's a pretty small city. It's 100,000 people.
Yeah. That's about the bottom end of what we're looking for. So,
yeah,
hey,
and
I mean, if it's an educational hub. What?
What did you say?
If it's an educational hub, you know, it might be an interesting educational hub, a retail hub of an area, could make an interesting market to follow.
Well, Lockheed Martin has a plant there.
Yep. Is there one big employer there? That would be a concern.
Yeah, Lockheed Martin and Walmart has like 650 employees. It's a nice stable market, and the cap rate's at 9%. So.
Well, be careful. If there's two major employers in an area, and that's it, I would be careful. You want to see a diversified employee base. If Lockheed
okay.
Martin, all of a sudden, you know, the next recession, Lockheed loses a bunch of contracts and they lay off a bunch of jobs, you got a situation.
Right.
But again, I don't know
okay,
the market,
Dave.
So. All right, good talking to you.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. You have a good day. Enjoy your week.
Oh, you too. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, we got time for one more. Who's our last caller? Last call of the day.
Okay, up next we have Eddie. Eddie, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave. Hey, how you doing? This is Eddie. How's it going, buddy?
Good.
Just quick question. What is the... who would you recommend as far as a refinance on a I'm in West Virginia, so I'm looking for to do a refi on about 32 units, somewhere in the $4 million range.
$4 million?
Yeah.
I would use Eric Stewart. Did you meet him at the boot camp?
What was his name?
Eric Stewart.
Eric Stewart.
Did you meet him at boot camp? He's usually at the boot camp. I'll give you his number. He usually teaches how to put a loan package together. He's a loan broker. You'll get charged 1%, but he'll go out there and he'll get you the best deal. He'll get you the best for the type of building you have and the financing that you need. He will go out and he'll source like 6 or 10 different lenders to get their best term sheets. And after, you know, between you and he, you choose the best one. He'll start negotiating to make it even better.
Okay,
his number is, his name is Eric Stewart, and his name is and his number is 321-615-8919. Just tell me one of our students, and he'll treat you like gold. He treats
great.
Everybody like gold. He's a good guy.
You said Eric Stewart, correct?
Yep.
Okay, I thought you said Derek Lewis. Okay, Eric Stewart, 321-615-8919.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Awesome.
You're welcome.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
Take care.
You
too. All right. So your homework is to get out there and get in two offers. Get yourself into two networking situations. And that could be a meetup. That could be a RIA, Real Estate Investment Association. That could be a social group. Just get yourself in two situations where somebody's going to turn to you and say, what do you do? And that is going to increase your network list. Just do two and two every week. Every week, if you do two and two, you cannot help but be successful. It's a proven formula. But you got to do two and two. You got to do your part. All right, next week, I believe it's Grill Genie, and I'll see you the week after that. Again, we're having the Mastery Video Contest. So your Mastery student, put together a video. If you've done a deal, put together a video of your deal, your family, what was life like before, what was life during, what's life like after. You haven't done a deal, you could put something together about the Mastery program itself. And what we're doing is we're doing a contest for Ultimate Partnering 9. And we're going to have the audience choose which one they think is the best, and then the winner is going to get a day consulting with me, entire day. You know, I'm going to give you some homework so we're prepared for that day, but we're going to tear your business apart, and we're going to get you a plan to get you to wherever, whatever goal it is that you have, and we'll go to the Harvard Club for lunch. Maybe I'll take you a tour of Harvard University as well, my old stomping grounds. But okay, so I will see everybody in about 2 weeks. Bye, everybody. Good luck out there. Make offers.